This podcast is produced by All In Media, hosted by Itamar Roy. Hey, Ilan.
Hey, how are you?
How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
You came for a short visit.
Yeah, I came for a week.
For a week.
Fashion week.
For the fashion week, actually.
Yes. Did you visit?
No, actually. But I saw it on Instagram, on Facebook, and I saw you guys are quite present.
Yeah, it was... I was only there one day, but the guys from the different people from the teams went. It was a memorable week. You should have gone.
Yeah, you're right.
Clovey, next right. time we need to get him tickets.
Actually,
it's unfair.
Actually, you're right. So, and how was it? It was good. You enjoyed?
I enjoyed, well, the first evening, I was only in the first evening in the gala, and Cornette sponsored the week, and we work with a lot of the designers, but on the first night, it was emotional because we were pushing the democratic walk, where there were 15 designers who did things in and around democracy. And as an Israeli, again, for me, it was emotional because the songs were very powerful, and some of the designs were amazing, and they hit home. And I thought Ronen's speech was correct, because at the end of the day, it was very touching for me. It was strong because Cornette stands as a culture for creativity, for pluralism, for diversity. It doesn't matter your age, your color, your religion, your size, your sexual orientation. That's the beauty of fashion. And Cornette is an inclusive company, has to stand behind things that are democratic, the things that enable and societies that enable creativities, such as Israel does. And I thought the stand that we took there was very powerful. It was really pushed strongly in the past, and I felt connected to that evening very strongly. And the rest of the shows, I wasn't at there, but I saw some of the designs. Beautiful stuff.
Beautiful stuff. Yeah, I saw it too.
Yeah.
So when you've mentioned some terms that are very highly spoken nowadays, and I want to take it or to sort of see it through your career and through your career path and during the years you've done, because you've lived in India and you lived in Japan and now you live in the United States and you are a very global guy. Also, you've worked in various industries. We've mentioned before Jekka, that I had the privilege to host here, and you guys know each other from before. Can you please give me a short introduction of what you did before?
Sure. I was born in Jerusalem. And for everyone who knows Jerusalem,
the internal capital of the
Now we're having a political statement, we have to watch out.
No, you should remember Arik Sharon's statement that said every time he came to America, it was the beginning of his speech. He said, "I come here from Jerusalem, the eternal capital."
I don't remember
of the Jewish
that,
people.
Okay.
Every time.
I was born in Jerusalem, and for those who come from Jerusalem know that at least when we were born, I was born in 67, so it was there's a meaning for Jerusalem after it was liberated or united. And then I grew up in Jerusalem, moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I'm not allowed to hit the table?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's forbidden here.
It's forbidden here. I'll keep my hands to myself. Moved to Atlanta, Georgia in the 70s, which was not an easy place. My dad worked for the Israeli government. And I grew up in Atlanta, which was a very... It was interesting times in Atlanta, because it was 6 years after Martin Luther King was shot. There was Ku Klux Klan. I went to a Jewish school, and we had a cross burnt in the school. And it was interesting. As a kid, I remember...
70s in the States.
70s in the States. In Atlanta, you know, you grew
movies
up...
Movies were made.
I missed that. Yeah. They never called me. Then I was in Israel. I was in the Air Force for many years and joined an Israeli company and moved to Paris. Lived in Paris for a year with software as a service. And then the .com exploded. And I moved to London. Lived in London where my two boys were born. And I was there for 7 years, worked in the telecom industry. And did an executive MBA at Columbia in London Business School, raised money, moved to India to start real estate. And that never do that. So moved to India. And after 5 years of slugging it out as an entrepreneur, which was very tough, I moved to Daimler, worked in Daimler 2 years in India, and then I moved from there to Japan and managed a very wide region in Japan. And JECA, who I brought into Fuso in the U.S. to manage the U.S. activities, called me and said, initially it was to manage Japan, and at the end that they hired someone else at the time. And I was doing a bit of consultancy with Kornit. And then Ronen called me and asked me to take over APAC. So I did that for 2 years. Very interesting time due to COVID. I met most of my team 3 weeks before I left the position. And then moved. Part of the team I haven't met till today, guys from China. I unfortunately couldn't meet. So it was managing people through a closed room and speaking over Zoom for 2.5 years. And when the opportunity came and Ronen offered me to move to the States, I moved in January to the U.S. So it's been for me, it's been a fascinating, people love the word journey, but it's been fascinating because when you talk about diversity, think about me being a white dude in India. And I remember Japan. My son, who is Daniel, who's sitting here, when he was 7, and he had what they called the Jew Afro. He had this huge hair of curls, and they were half red, half brown. And he stood one day, and he's standing, and his eyes are wandering, and he's looking up to me, and he says, "Abba, everyone's looking at me." And I look around and you see huge amount of Indian guys looking at him because people wanted to take pictures with him. You understand that was the, so, and in Japan and Asia.
Do you see life after living in Japan for 7 years? I mean, it's a whole different civilization, all different. I was there just for a short visit, 3 weeks visit. It was great. But living in Japan, I mean, culturally, business-wise, it's
different. I have to say that, it's a mixed. Because a lot of people say, I'd live in Japan all my life. There are things in Japan that you can't get anywhere else in the world. First of all, everything is structured. Everything is accurate. You have to toe the line. You can't move a bit to the left or to the right. Everything, it's very, very safe. Everything, when I say everything is accurate, the food is unbelievable. The art is, everything is beautiful. I think the challenge Japan has is that it's become too accurate. It's become too straight. It's become constraints under the rules that you have there. And think of the contrast where you come from India, where it's chaos. It's actually controlled chaos in India, to a place where everything is so straight. India, the train could be late by a day. In Japan, it's not late by a second. And we had an amazing experience. It was fun. It was totally different than other places we lived. But at least for me, after 7.5 years, I felt I needed something a bit more chaotic. At the end, you could take these, you could take me out of Israel, but you can't take Israel out of me. And that helped me a bit in Japan, because the Japanese really relate to people who are not like them. They're very welcoming. They love the a bit more free spirit. So from that perspective, it gave me a bit of an advantage to a certain point where they would then stop me. But it was a fascinating time. I also worked for a German company. So just think,
wow,
a German in Japan,
working for a German company
in Japan. Me, I was the most. They always called me the most unstructured person they've ever met. So yeah, that was.
And how was it coming? You defined yourself as an unstructured guy. In a structured society when you lived in Japan or whatever. What do you do now, and how do you, or did you brought your unstructured patterns to your job?
I don't know if you remember, everything is relativity is a big thing. When I came to, and this is what my Germans now laugh at me, I said I moved from being the most unstructured person to being the most structured person. And I think that helped me a bit to understand, because you get a lot of great foundations working for such large companies. The processes, the way of thinking, the processes come to compensate on the different people that come in, because these are huge companies. Daimler as an organization is bigger than Tel Aviv. It's 350,000 people. Think if they're unstructured, what would happen? And even within that structure, they still find a way to create amazing designs. You look at their cars, and they still try to find a way to pull in people who are creative. And Daimler in 2020, Jack and I were part of this group within Daimler. They picked 100 employees out of the within the company to try to break the structure, because they felt they've reached a point that if they don't reinvent themselves, if they don't connect to the Generation Z and others, they will disappear. They will become dinosaurs. And I remember Seche, who was at the time the CEO, always walked around with a suit and tie, moved to jeans. And that was unheard of. For Germans to walk around in jeans was a revolution. And I come to a place like Kornit where if you have too much structure, you lose that ability to create. And you see in Kornit the creativity, the way to think outside the box, to push yourself as a small, relatively small company, to be a leader in the world and reposition yourself as a company, not as a printing company, but as a fashion company. It's fascinating. And that within itself creates different interests and it attracts different people. Now, part of my, it's not a criticism, but I think a place where Kornit has to learn is how does Kornit become a bit more structured? Because at the end of the day, we have so many processes that need to be put in place to give better service to the customers, to create less chaos with our employees. And I think that hopefully the new ERP system will help us in that. But I think that's a place where hopefully some of the stuff I bought from the Germans will help. But as an organization, we do need to find areas where we're a bit more organized, because it's costing us a lot of money, but also aggravations and energies. If you don't focus your energies to good things and you always have to fix some of the stuff that are bad, I think that's an area where, as an organization, we can and should improve.
So what are the first things you've learned coming to the United States and now running the show there? No, isn't it?
Well, I have a very good team that helps me run the show.
Yeah.
If you try to run it alone, you hit a block very quickly. It's different. The U.S. is different. We always looked, I mean, Chris, who's leading Europe, and myself always looked up to the U.S., and they were number one. And I think part of the challenges the U.S. faced was that everything was around Amazon and Printful. And there was a lot of focus on those organizations. And you see that over the last year before I came, the company started understanding that we have problems, let's say, with the strategic accounts. So they built teams that focused on that. and which helped. So a lot of our strategic accounts, which lost faith in Kornit, are now coming back because of those organizations. It started with Udi and Dan Labor is now the head of customer success. So he's now hopefully will bring it to the rest of the customers, and Jeff and his team. But you see, you know, the U.S. has changed. It used to be only a U.S. organization. Now we have a very strong team in LATAM, in Latin America, which is led by Luis, and we have great partners there. And I think that the sales organization in the U.S. we're shifting. We had a lot of guys leave, some better than others, but I think all in all, the team that the nucleus team that stayed is very strong, and now we're rebuilding that team. We have great teams in finance, in logistics. We have amazing application engineers. And the question is, how do you take that collective with amazing people and put them together as a team so that the collective is much stronger than the individuals? And I think that was lost a bit over the last year. And you see that and you feel that. And hopefully some of the basic things that we're putting in place is helping the organization grow. But the U.S. in terms of power, purchase power, and is unbelievable. It's so different than Asia. It's so different than Europe. Americans buy, they purchase.
The American
culture, yeah, is about how much my dollar takes me and what do I buy. And you see the business people that you meet, they think so much differently than, they think big. And I think that that's something that caught me by surprise. You always heard about these, you know, Amazon, thousands of, you know, systems and people, and you see, but when you meet some of the entrepreneurs, they don't think small.
Yeah.
They think big. And that within itself for me was, it's fascinating, because when you speak to Asians, I want to buy one system, and they're very frugal and very cautious. And I think Iran from the corporate development team said to me, either go big or go home. Think big or go home. And I think that's really the American way. And it's, I think for Kornit, there's huge opportunities there.
Can you take me to the huge opportunities?
Yeah, I mean,
we've talked about sports, which I was fascinated, yeah, about. First, about sports.
Do you like sports?
Yeah, I like sports.
What's your soccer?
Basketball, do? NBA, NFL, whatever you guys, okay, watch, I watch too.
Okay, and which Israeli soccer team do you
Maccabi
like?
Maccabi Haifa.
Ah, okay. Maccabi Haifa is always everyone else's second team.
Okay.
It's like my two nephews. They all walk around in green and so on.
Maccabi Haifa.
I don't know if it's, I'm allowed to say it. I'm Beitar Yerushalayim.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, today it's less, but...
You're allowed.
Allowed. No, it's allowed.
It's
no,
a democracy.
I know, but I have no... You know, once you fall in love with a soccer team, they say it's forever.
Yeah,
you can't let go of it. Yeah. So... We're seeing, so I'll give you a few examples, and I think this is some of the stuff that we're seeing in the world. By the way, you should think about it here, because All In is like, you guys are a brand already in Israel, and I know a lot of people said, I'm meeting Itamar for All In in the morning. Are you meeting Itamar? Yeah, I didn't know you, so we need to do a selfie afterwards. We're working with a company by the name of Amaze. Amaze works with influencers. Now, we all talk about, Kornit talks about Kornit X, and the employees all know about this. And there's been a lot of questions about Kornit X. It's a company that we acquired 2 years ago under Custom Gateway, and we haven't been able to really accelerate there. We've had small successes. And from our side, Dawn and their CEO met, and it took a bit of while to get that relationship warmed up. But when it did, we understood, at least me for the first time, understood the power of the influencers. These guys work with 10 million influencers. Understand? It's bigger than the state. Just think, a company works with every Israeli. those influencers don't work on a maze. They work on platforms. They work on Instagram and YouTube and Snapchat and TikTok and any other platform that you know. And they have followers. Now, they work with a small follower. So I don't know how many people listen to All In, but they work up to people that make money up to $10 million on merchandise and advertisement and so on. And what they do is they enable those influencers to sell anything that they create. And it's cool because some of these influencers sit with their crowd and they design together a hoodie or a t-shirt or cups, whatever you want to, anything that you want to create. So what happens with Amaze is Amaze enables those creators to generate and monetize their capabilities, because once you start following someone, he comes out with the t-shirt, in most cases you may buy it. They want to work with Kornit because the Kornit platform for printing is the strongest. But they said, hey guys, we don't only send garments, we want to sell cups, we want to sell other accessories, and right. Kornit X gives them that solution. And we put them in touch with a customer of ours named Fifth Son. It's a big fulfiller that sits in California. They get 30,000 new impressions a week. Now, that's not a lot. They're aspiring to get to 200,000 a week. For Kornit, it's huge. Think how many machines we can put in place. Think how many click charges you get from Kornit X. Think of the economy that grows in and around websites of influencers. They become brands themselves. Now, when they grow to a certain
level, you see it all over.
Right. And just think, once they become even bigger, over $10 million, they become their own brand. So Kornit can essentially connect to them and go with them to the next level. And that's the power of big. And when you talk about sports, we met a sports company the other day that has 25% of the NFL rights to sell.
Good business.
Not bad at all. I didn't know how big the NFL was. I mean, NFL is a sport, I'm sorry, Americans, was a sport that was created for advertisement. You know, every 3 seconds they stop and they advertise. They're talking about taking this company from about $100 million today to $500 million within 3 years. And most of the merchandise that you buy from the NFL, most of it is garments, the T-shirts, the numbers. And again, they work with Fifth Son. So I've said Fifth Son twice, but they're looking to expand globally with over Kornit X and over the network. By the way, Amaze is pushing us for Australia, for LATAM, for Europe. So these guys are looking to do Europe and LATAM, where they do soccer teams. They do the NFL. They're trying to get into the NBA. And what they want to do is globally, they want to work with the polyester fabrics because that's mostly sports. And they want to make sure it may sound like I'm dumbing it down, but they're looking for McDonald's. They're looking for Starbucks. They want the same quality wherever they walk around the globe, wherever you buy a t-shirt, that they don't need to ship it from the United States. They want it to go on showing and local. And they want a cookie cutter. But think about
scale.
Yourself.
The word scale. Is scale.
Scale. That's a great word. But think about yourself. When you walk around and you don't know what coffee you're going to drink, and okay,
you go Paris, to Starbucks.
You go to Starbucks now. Okay. When you go to Paris, you don't need a Starbucks. When you go to London, you may, Italy, you go everywhere. So think about the fact, and we need to look at it also from the sports team view. The colors and the shades that they use, for them, it has to be the same globally. And for them, the fact that this company can, over a Kornit platform, gives the NFL teams the comfort that when they give something to a company, that the brand will not be diminished in other areas. Because what you see when if you see a nice t-shirt or a nice colors and logos, it keeps the brand at a certain level globally. And so it's not only the the people who are printing, but it's also the source, which requires very high levels of proficiencies and accuracy of the brand.
Standard.
Yeah, the standard one. Yeah, thanks with my English. Thank you.
How many people, let's talk people.
Okay.
How many people work for Cognite in America?
We currently have around the 135. It's across all of it's the Americas. So I have, and it's a bit more because we have Voxel 8, and we're around 155 people today. So some of the people report directly to me. We have a development arm that sits in Boston that reports to Israel, to Kobe Mann's team. And we have, out of that team, think about it, we have four people in Brazil, Argentina, Mexico. We have three there, three salespeople. We have Itamar, the Brazilian.
Brazilian,
he's not Israeli. And I asked him, how'd you get that name? He says, well, my parents, it's a biblical name. So Itamar lives in Brazil. I'm trying to think who else lives in Latin America. And we have guys, actually Conrado, who supports Latin America, lives in Canada.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we have, so that's just Latam. And in the United States, we have around, Joanna, keep me honest, around 50 to 60 people sitting in New Jersey, and the rest all across the United States.
Most of them are sales, if I can.
No, actually, most of them are customer success. The smaller team is, customer success is more than half of the team. Since in the past, we used to do things through partners in the United States, and then we decided to bring it in. So we still have a strong group sitting in Wisconsin, is where we started. Don't ask me why. We started in Wisconsin, but we have a great team coming out of there. So those are the people. We have a guy by the name of Eric who's been with the organization for 15 years, which is a lot in Cognite. And we have engineers, salespeople from all across the United States. So a very diverse group of people and really all over.
What are the biggest challenges you face nowadays?
We face a lot, so I'm trying to think what's the...
I'll
tell you, the first
one... The highlights.
One, I think the first one in this, I told this to the customers and I told it to the team. The first is employee engagement. The employee engagement was significantly down in the United States over 2022. 2021 was a high. We had an amazing year of sales. And due to the economy and other challenges, a few challenges we had, but it was mainly the economy. A lot of the big customers stopped buying because they bought a lot of capacity through COVID. And when COVID stopped, a lot of that capacity stayed open because a lot of people went back to retail. And the team, which was on a very big high in 2021, in Q2, I think sales dropped significantly. And with that, the employee engagement, the confidence, unfortunately, the company had to go through a RIF and a lot of people left. And so the biggest challenge by far is how do we get the core people, the 140, 150 who today work out of the United States, how do we gain the confidence back? Because at the end of the day, Cognite is an amazing company. And so the question was always, was for me more important than the customer engagement when we spoke, when we came in this morning, is how do I make sure for me and for the team that we have that we are engaged in the company? Because you can give the customer whatever you want. If the employees don't have confidence in the company, they cannot go do a good job out there. And if they're not engaged, the customers aren't engaged. So a customer asked me, what's my biggest thing? I'm telling you now, by far, it's the employee engagement. If we can get that correct, if we can train the people back, if we can create confidence, in the organization, in the capabilities. And all we need to do is for them to listen to the customers, because the customers think Kornit's technology and capabilities are by far the best today in the market. So if I can get that going, I believe the rest will fall in line. Second is, of course, for us, it's the customers. We have things that we need to do better at Kornit. We need to send systems of out of the box in much higher quality. We need to make sure that our systems are stabler. At the end, we're an industrial, we supply industrial equipment. No one buys a Kornit to have a Kornit. It's not like you have a Ferrari to walk around and show it. People want Kornit because it's a strong brand and they believe in the quality
of the product.
And if we cannot make sure that the systems are stable and work at the level and precision that the customer expects them, we will have a hard time in the market. So that's on Kornit and on the customer success people to help, but it's also on R&D, production, to make sure that we get that. And I think that's an organizational initiative that Ronen, Ilan, and Ben Zion are taking on themselves. And the third thing, and that's not on me, but that's on, you know, on Kobe, on Omer and others, is how do we continue being ahead of the curve? Because we're a technological company. And the idea for us is to take ourselves to places where others haven't gone. And I believe over time, we will replace a lot of the screen printing because the runs are becoming shorter. People want onshoring. People do care about sustainability. So if we can find that...
Yeah, it's not a facade?
No, it's a facade. First of all, people use it as a facade and they don't want to pay for it. They want it, but they don't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, the amazing thing is that the youngsters, the Generation Z, is requiring it. So if you... People want authenticity. So when I say I'm sustainable and people can prove otherwise, the brand really gets hurt. People don't like, if you think about today, a lot of people my age, when they say Exxon, it's not fuel, it's those birds in Alaska that were full of oil. Ask my sons, what do they care about? They care about sustainability. Now, they're willing to pay 3 times the price? No, but if the differences aren't that big, they'll go for it. So you see companies like H&M. You look, people like IKEA. You hear especially the European brands, they want sustainability and they believe in it. Fair trade. They want to make sure that the suppliers get paid correctly. You go to in the UK to a Waitrose or Tesco, you see that they show fair trade and they try to show pictures of the farmers. Now, is it real or not? I've never checked. I've never called the farmers. But once you start going down that route, it's very hard to go back. So if Kornit, so if Kornit can keep the sustainability route, and that's very clear that what we're doing around the ESG and so on.
And keep the trust.
Keep the trust and authenticity, and we enable the brands to use that because they say, hey, we have Kornit, and look, this is a sustainable production. And if we can connect ourselves to sustainable T-shirts and sustainable and places where we work correctly, and then I go back to where we started, where Ronen was talking about a culture of a company, that it's more than just equipment, it's a culture. I think that authenticity connects with a lot of the bigger customers and brands. And our job is to find ways to lower the TCO and lower the costs of the systems and the inks in order for us to become a much wider, because today we're the leader in print on demand for one-offs. But if we can find a way to find the equilibrium for screen printing, there's no question that if there's a small difference between us and a screen printer, people will move to digital. It's more accurate. You can print as much as you want. It's cleaner, less people that they need to employ. We can and we should strive going down that route. And I'm happy that that's the area where we're shifting to now with several of the business opportunities and some of the systems that were coming out, to start to attract and target those markets.
Ilan Elad, thank you very much for being with us.
Itamar, thank you for having me.
Thank
you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.